the conversation was getting kind of bland, so I wanted to spice it up a little bit.
Get to break free.
Actually, I've been wanting to talk to you, Josh, about the boring drinks you've been drinking.
Brad's always, you know, drinking homebrew.
But you got pizza rolls for dinner.
I work with this crazy guy.
Brought to you by Kleenex.
Fire it up. Howdy, y'all, and welcome back to the Sports Flicks Just Give Us Clicks podcast. I am your host of the month, Rob, and I am, of course, surrounded here by my friends in the Zoom computer land. And we've got Phil Boone, we've got Brad Walthall, we got Bud Still, and tall as always, Josh Still. Hey, guys, how y'all doing tonight?
Fantastic. Hello, doing well.
Glad to be here.
Muy caliente.
I like the energy. I'm feeling it. Hey, so when we started this podcast of ours a few months back, we had a discussion about what exactly are we going to be discussing and reviewing. And one of the things that came up was 30 for 30 documentaries. And for our listeners who are living under a rock, 30 for 30 is a documentary series that is on ESPN. It's been running for the better part of what, the last 10, 12 years, it feels at this point, guys.
Yeah.
Don't knock our Iraq followers. They're a very loyal group.
You know, I work with geologists. I mean, if they love rocks, we can have a rock podcast.
No, I said Iraq. Iraq. Iraq followers are a good group.
Always looking for new countries.
My apologies to those fine people out there.
Always looking for new countries.
We're looking for them, man. And join on, man. Give us a like on the Instagram or, you know, the Facebook. Give us a review even. But yeah, so 30 for 30. It's been going on for a while now. But the strange thing with 30 for 30s for me is there's a handful of them. And I'll be like just sitting on my couch or, you know, just kind of, I have nothing better to watch. I'll go over to the ESPN app and I pull up for 30 for 30 and I seem to be watching the same ones, or at least I'm like drawn to, you know, the same ones over and over and over again. And so I pose this question to you guys, because I y'all are sadly sort of like-minded in some weird way. What 30 for 30 films are you guys just finding yourselves watching on repeat or have watched several times? And I'm going to throw this over to Mr. Brad to begin us.
You know, I didn't have a lot of multiples because honestly, I do watch it, but I probably don't as much as some of the rest of you guys. The one that really popped out when I saw this question, though, I can't remember the actual title of it, but it was the one focusing on Bo Jackson. First of all, I mean, that guy's story in and of itself, I mean, you don't even need a writer to, you know, have some quality entertainment there, because his story and what he did across multiple sports was just amazing. But I thought they did a pretty good job with the way they handled it and the way they had, and they couldn't hit all the points, but I really did feel like it told a good story. And it seems like I've seen that one on, and it's like a movie you've seen 10 times. You'd be like, well, I still want to watch it again.
It's called that one's Bo Knows, right? Isn't that Bo Knows?
Yeah, Bo Knows. That's what
there, it's called. You Don't Know Bo,
or You Don't Know Bo,
because it was following the take ad on the campaign. Nike. Yeah,
for all you young kids out there, I mean, Bo Jackson was one of the best athletes ever, honestly. I mean, he was high-level Major League Baseball and NFL player until injuries kind of ruined. He broke his hip, I think, which ruined his running back career. But he was still a productive major leaguer for several years after that.
Yeah. That's one of those movies that actually is on my list, Brad, too. I love the Bo Jackson one. If for anything, how they used a comic book hero element in it,
yep,
and just how he's larger than life, and the stories about Bo Jackson, they're just anecdotal. Some of these are just outrageous. Like, I mean, he picks up a rock and he throws a rock and the rock flew to the other town and killed a horse or something. It's just like these are the stupidest, most ludicrous stories, but yet apparently, like, this is what was spoken of. And this is like, you know, when Bo Jackson's like 10 years old and people are talking about him like 3-4 towns over, about just this larger than life John Bunyan like hero. And then he turns into it.
That was a great one. Yeah, that's a great one.
And there just weren't a lot of multi-sport athletes that could not only do both, but could be like superstars in both. Now he was one of a kind for sure. And I really enjoy that one. So
I like you think about like Bo Jackson in the time, particularly when he was at Auburn. I mean, this was what, you know, like a 1985. Yeah. Like 1985 basically. Yeah. And at that same time period, you had Herschel Walker. It was also going on over at Georgia, and you had, who's the OU running back actually there's a 30 for 30 about him too.
Yeah. The one, it's like the legend that never was or something like that.
Yeah. I it's on the tip of my tongue. I can't.
Not quite Johnny think. Owens. Is it? That was,
No, it wasn't. It was,
I can't think of his name either.
Billy Sims.
Joe Delaney.
It was after Billy Sims.
Billy Sims was in the late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
Anyway, I mean, what I find is just interesting is that you had these three just huge running backs that were playing all at the exact same time and just putting up like these insane stats. And out of all of them, Herschel won Heisman Trophy. But
there we go. There we go, Rob.
Yeah.
It's Marcus Dupree.
Marcus Dupree. That's it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And the greatest that never was.
Didn't Bo Jackson win the Heisman too?
Yeah, he ended up winning in 85. Yeah,
absolutely.
And Herschel Walker won 84, I believe. That's just a really
like
cool
Walker kind of had like a mythical quality to him also, like to a lesser degree, but how he would just, you know, he never worked out with weights. Like he always just did push-ups and sit-ups and all this stuff.
Like 1,000 push-ups and 1,000.
Hugely buff because, he did like 1,000 push-ups a day or like 1,000 sit-ups a day and all this, you know.
And I'll always be appreciative of Herschel Walker because the trade Jimmy Johnson got for him with the Cowboys is basically what built our dynasty of the early 90s. So thank you, Herschel Walker, for that.
It's kind of the point I'm making, though. I mean, it was like this time of like mythical, you could have those stories about
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And there watching was no Bo internet. You know?
Watching Bo Jackson just beat Bosworth is super fun to watch.
I think that's what helped guys.
That was on Monday Night Football, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When he ran him over at the goal line.
Brad, that was an excellent one that I didn't have on my list, but I have watched numerous times. And that's one for me because actually, but like I love football and sports and all that, but Bo Jackson is before my football watching time. He's one that I never watched live because I didn't really get into football till like 94. I love the history of the game. So he's one that I was looking forward to so I could actually see when it came out, just a documentary on him because I've heard all this stuff about him, but I didn't really watch him because he was right before my time.
You think about playing running back, as we all know, that's like one of the most torturing positions on your body in the league too. And I think that makes it even more impressive that he was dual sport is because we all know the average amount of seasons that a running back can, you know, withstand in the league. It's just not that high. So the fact he was able to do dual sports and do them well was even more impressive.
Yeah, he was running up the wall in the outfield making circus catches.
Yeah, after taking all the abuse on the football field.
For the Royals, baby.
Royals, yep.
Are you looking at his stats from like 1989 for the Kansas City Royals? I'm looking at him right now. I mean, this is just insane. He had 32 home runs, 105 RBI, 26 stolen bases.
He was still playing in the NFL then, I think.
Yeah.
I don't even think he had all
the
places.
The 25, 100.
Yeah, Bud, you're right. He only played 135 games.
Actually, Deion Sanders was probably the closest dual threat that was actually legitimate at both sports. I mean, Deion was obviously a Hall of Fame football player, but he was a really good center fielder. He led the league in stolen bases, I think, one year.
Yeah, and Deion Sanders.
When he was playing for the Reds.
And this wasn't on my list, but have you guys watched the Deion Sanders?
The Deion double play.
That is one I've watched numerous times.
So see, you can have a 30 for 30 made from you if you can go and excel at two professional sports at the same time. That's all it takes.
Yeah. All it takes.
That's it.
Go jump on that, Phil.
Mr. Bud, I know you're a 30 for 30 connoisseur.
I actually had three with kind of a bonus one.
Go for it.
My kind of guilty pleasure one is this Magic moment, just because I was such a huge Orlando Magic fan back in the
Penny
Hardaway Shaq ones. So I love watching it.
Yeah.
Even though it's probably not one of traditionally the best ones, I just like watching it because it brings back, you know, memories of my childhood, being a huge Penny Hardaway and Shaq fan. back in those days. My favorite one is Jordan Rides the Bus, and I'm rocking my Michael Jordan shirt.
See that?
For two reasons, actually, and we'll talk about that later, but I love the Jordan Rides the Bus one. Like it goes into depth about why he went and just left. He was by far the best player in the NBA, had just won 3 straight NBA titles, just walks away from it after his dad dies to go try to play pro baseball. And actually started getting, and they go into the fact that like his last year, he started actually kind of getting good enough to where he might have legitimately had a chance. He wouldn't have been a star, but at least like make the major league roster and be a contributor. And then they go into him coming back and like how he did it. He was like, you know, just keep it simple. He sent a fax that with 2 words that said, "I'm back." And that was it. And Jordan was back. And like, I don't know. I love that one. I love almost all things Michael Jordan, though. But third one, and I won't go into too much detail with this, was the Bad Boys Pistons one. And honestly, that was kind of, I'm with Phil, and that was kind of, it was just right on the fringes of when I started liking sports is when the Bad Boy Pistons were big. But it's still, I think it's a really well-made 30 for 30, and it's an entertaining watch. My bonus one is actually technically not a 30 for 30, although it is an ESPN movie. It was actually made before they started doing 30 for 30s, but it probably would be considered one now, is the Brady Six. I love that one. It goes into detail about like the 6 quarterbacks drafted ahead of Tom Brady in the 2000 draft, the fact that he could still name them all. And like, and then all these, they interview all these coaches about like what they think, feel like they missed on Tom Brady, you know, and like they talk about how, you know, we could look at his measurables. We could look at his arm strength. We could look at his body, but we couldn't open up his chest and look at his heart. You know, and that was like, that's what made the difference, you know, and well, now he's still winning Super Bowls. That was made, I believe, in like 2010, 11 years later, he's tacked on 4 more Super Bowls since then. Those are my 4 rewatchable ESPN movies, I guess you could say, for various reasons.
Well, the thing about Tom Brady is, I mean, he was no Chris Redman. That was, oh, no. Chris Redman, I mean, come on. I mean,
or Giovanni Carmazzi. They go into, he was running like a goat farm in Utah or something like that. And he was drafted by Brady's childhood team, the 49ers, you know, and they passed on him for Giovanni Carmazzi.
I haven't watched the Brady Six, but that does sound awesome.
Excellent.
Catch it on YouTube.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think I've actually texted it to you guys before. That's how much I like it. But
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
I even watched it off your link when you sent it again.
It's awesome, right? I mean, even if you don't like Tom Brady, like, it's like, I don't know. It's just like, it's very telling about why he is as good as he is. Like, even now, he still thinks he's not very good. And he takes that attitude, like, every day in practice.
Yeah.
Always trying to prove.
Rob
loves Tom Brady right now.
Yeah, my feelings about Tom Brady.
Well, I mean, I'm a Chiefs fan too, but
let's just put it that way.
I respect him.
You still have to respect how great he is.
Yeah.
Whether or not you like him.
Like, I actually, as much as I love Michael Jordan now, I didn't cheer for the Bulls when I was a kid. I was a Magic
fan. Me neither.
But I always, like, respected him. And then now that he's, you know, long since retired, I can kind of look at his career in, like, more so of a admiring light than I did when he was actually playing, when I was just mad because he was beating my team all the time.
That's a good way of looking at this. I particularly how I – it's how I feel very similar – looking at Brady right now too. I did not root for Jordan. I never root for Jordan. I had some, you know, respect towards it, particularly when he was doing the second three-peat. And during the first one, I just remember being a little kid that, you know, it's probably a little prick and I just didn't give a shit about it. But and the second go through, you know, when he beat the Jazz the first time, I kind of knew that you're witnessing something that wasn't going to be seen again. And then when it actually occurred and he won that third one in a row for a second time, and my dad turns and goes, "You have no idea. You'll never see anything like this ever again." And you've rooted against him the whole time.
I know. I think the only time I was an active Jordan fan was when he came back to play for the Wizards. Cause at that point I had like started appreciating him.
Yeah.
And he still, even then in his early 40s, he showed flashes. Like, I remember they played the Bulls.
Well, he had like a 50-point game
yeah.
when he was with the Wizards, too.
They played the Bulls, and Ron Mercer was a rookie. and was like talking all this noise before the game. He's like, Jordan's an old man, like I'm gonna torch him and all this. Ron Mercer goes down there on a fast break and Jordan two hand stuffs him against the glass, just catches his layup against the glass.
That is always, whenever I think of him playing for the Wizards, that's the number one play I think of.
Yeah.
Because that was just, you did not expect Jordan, how old he was, to be able to do that.
Yeah, he was like 41 years old.
Yeah, but he was 41 years of pissed off too in that game.
Exactly. So. One thing you learn about him is that you didn't make him mad because he'd go after you.
Yeah. And I will say, as someone who despised the Jazz in the 90s, I definitely did root for Jordan quite a bit because I disliked the Jazz so much that I definitely rooted in the second three-peat. But we'll probably get more into Jordan at our next movie review. Yeah. We'll probably talk more about him quite a bit.
I don't see why we would.
Let's save some of that for next time.
His name may or may not come up. I'm not sure.
Mr. Josh.
All right, so I have a couple that you guys haven't brought up. I would say my number one 30 for 30 that if it's on, I will like sit and watch it is Broke. I think that one is really interesting because I catch myself. I'm like, really, these guys make so much money. How the heck are you bankrupt whenever you get a contract, you know, for $6 million, you know, signing bonus or whatever. It's like, how does this happen? But I'm always like, man, they got to be the biggest idiots, you know, and all this stuff. But the nuance in that 30 for 30 is that it's like, okay, once you become somebody like this, like your whole family, you become like the center of your whole family. So you're taking care of not only your mom and dad and your kids, but then like your uncle has a business he wants to start, or, you know, people at your church need money, or people come up to you and my kid has cancer, you know, all this stuff. So it's interesting how being normal people, you're like, oh, well, if I had $6 million, you know, I wouldn't have to work again a day in my life, whatever. You know, and then how does Vince Young end up bankrupt or whatever? And you can see, though, how quickly all these people that latch themselves to you is like, hey, you know, I just need 15 grand. That's nothing to a guy like you, you know, but 15 grand, 20 grand, you know, that adds up. So that one is always really interesting. And I still find things when I watch it like that interest me out of that one.
Car washes, man. Car washes.
Yeah. You know, every Cousin Sal's got a great, you know, or whatever. I guess it really is
a great idea for a car wash.
Or a great idea for a restaurant. Man, yeah, I make the best ribs. You know, it's like, well, how do you make them? Well, I buy this sauce at Walmart. It's like, oh, okay, that's
that's killer, man. Yeah, no one's ever done that.
Whenever someone gets drafted, they find out about so many family members they never knew they had.
Exactly.
I'm out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I've actually told Michelle this. If we won the lottery, I know exactly kind of what my game plan would be. The first call I would make was actually to Bud. And this is no offense to any of y'all, but my first phone call would actually be to Bud. Because I think Bud would actually be able to handle my money. And I can trust him.
I appreciate the trust.
He's the banker, right?
And then the second phone call I'm making is like, you know, to like Viking Cruises. And we going to be gone for a while.
That would be my number one favorite, you know. But I'm kind of like you guys. If one's on ESPN, I'll usually kind of watch them. I don't know. I really like the Dennis Rodman one. And I can't remember the name of it. But I think he is such an interesting guy. You know, he's like, he's not somebody that you can really peg. And then the more they get into him, into that show, you know, there's his persona that was big in the 90s and how he seemed larger than life and stuff. But inside, he was just like kind of this small town insecure guy, you know? I mean, the coach that recruited him, I guess he got kicked off the high school team, you know, and then he was just bumming it at his mom's house. His mom was going to kick him out. Then this, you know, I think Southeast Oklahoma or Northwest Oklahoma, whatever it was where
Southeast.
Southeast Oklahoma, yeah, is where he went. And the coach had to go knock on his door. He was like locked in his bedroom at his mom's house. He didn't want to talk to the guy. The guy had to beg him to come, you know, play for him. He was the only scholarship he got. And the only reason he got it is out of nowhere, he shot up to 6'8". You know, he was like a small kid, and he grew like 6 inches over a summer, you know? I mean, add that on top of all the other kind of like different things that have gotten way more publicity when you talk about him. And it's really interesting. It's another reason why I would put maybe along the lines of Bud picking the Brady six, even though it's not technically a 30 for 30. I'm going to say the obligatory The Last Dance, because that's a really good one. I feel like it basically started life as a 30 for 30 and then became a Netflix movie. But I'm like you guys, I love the Michael Jordan stuff, you know, even though I didn't like him at the time. You know, it's kind of a definitive sports story from my youth and our youth, and having Dennis Rodman, having, you know, Michael Jordan, all that stuff. I remember that whole team very vividly. So I picked them. And then my bonus one would be the Michael Vick. I think it's called Convict or something. That one's really interesting. And I just watched it recently, actually. It was just on ESPN, like maybe last week. And I found myself very interested in how much some of that situation kind of even parallels things that are going on today, you know, with his whole situation and kind of the tribalism involved with how things were viewed and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to get into politics. Everybody buys sneakers, right? But, you know, I just found it was interesting. He was mostly a likable guy, you know, and then had this very big mistake, but then was able to serve his time, did everything he needed to do, and then came back. And I can't remember, I didn't watch the whole thing this last time, so I don't remember if it got into the fact that he came back and played for the Eagles and actually did pretty good when he played for them. But he could totally turn his life around, you know, after that stuff. So
that's a two-parter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a two-parter. They go into Andy Reid.
Did you see he ran a 4.7 40?
Yes,
like last week
I actually saw that.
He was disappointed. He was like, dang it. And everyone else is like, he still got it.
Patrick Mahomes is like, I never ran a 4.7.
The Rodman one is really good. I actually forgot to mention that one. The Rodman was actually really good, especially when they talk about his youth and like when he stayed with that random white family in Southeast Oklahoma.
Yes. I didn't know any of that stuff. He was very interesting.
And he like slept in the 10-year-old kid's room or whatever. And that was like his best friend when he was like 18. Rodman had some crazy stat lines.
Such a hodgepodge of influences. It's no wonder that he was so different, you know?
Yeah, he was very, very unique character, and I think he played the villain role well, if you will. You know, he played that role, but I don't think he was as villainous as it was made out to be in reality. He was weird as...
He was extremely insecure.
But, you know, he played that villain role. He was always seen as that villain role on that team.
He was a good actor. Which is also why he did do wrestling and did like, because he was good at that time, pumping up the crowd, because he was not that guy that he portrayed on the court half the time. So he was just a good actor.
And now he's an ambassador to North Korea, him and Kim Jong-un, right?
I mean, some of his stat lines when he was playing, I saw some random meme, I think it was on Facebook, where I was talking about some of his stat lines. He had one game where he grabbed 25 rebounds and didn't take a single shot. Like, you would never see that nowadays.
Yeah, you'd never see that anymore.
It was like 22 rebounds, 1 point. 25 rebounds, 0 shots. It's like, who would... you never see that anymore. It's crazy. He was so unique. And he was relatively undersized for like a center. He was 6'8", 6'9", and strong, extremely strong. But he gave Shaq, he guarded Shaq harder than anyone.
Yeah.
Because he would screw with it. He'd screw with his mind, and Karl Malone too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Rodman was a great player. And like what tied together that whole 96 through 98, like Last Dance Jordan team, or, you know, Bulls teams.
I don't think they win the 98. title without Rodman.
Well, the interesting thing about The Last Dance is when they were talking with him and he talked about how he would practice, he would have people shoot and he knew where the ball was going to bounce. He worked on knowing the angles, which is something that I don't think most players would do.
Well, you know, it's because they had very good geometry courses in Durant, Oklahoma.
Yeah. What do you guys think on talking about Michael Vick? Okay, say the same situation played out today. how do you think it plays out both with the NFL, other teams welcoming him back, certain things? That I feel like we're in a different time too of how public
I feel like he'd be defines even more
NFL team behaviors, if that makes sense. On people, if people would want him, if they would want that stigma, stuff like that.
I don't think he's back in the league. I don't think he gets a second chance.
Yeah.
He would have been demonized like Ray Rice was, probably even more so now.
Yeah.
But he was pretty demonized back then. I mean, people are passionate about some dogs. I mean,
And the thing that was interesting about Vic is that that has happened before, just of those type of events happening where someone has to leave or get into legal trouble or whatever. But rarely has it ever happened that it was, I mean, Ray Rice could be up there maybe, but not as much as Vic. But rarely has it happened where it was someone of that high of a player or celebrity. He was on top of the world when that happened.
It happened in his prime, too. I mean,
yeah, it happened in his prime.
With Ray Rice was already... It was questionable
on the way
if he was even going to be re-signed.
Yeah, that's true. But with Vic, that rarely happens where someone is in his prime, one of the best at his position, on the front of magazines, video games, whatever, and something like that happens. Like Ray Carruth got arrested when he was playing for having a hitman try to kill his wife in the 90s.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
I forgot about Ray Carruth.
Yeah, they found him hiding in the trunk of his car. Right?
But I mean, that happened
like the Jason Williams story.
But he wasn't an all pro or anything. He was just third receiver or whatever for the Panthers. But with Vic, he was on top of the world when that happened.
I remember Vic playing at Virginia Tech, man. I thought that guy was so cool, man. He was awesome in college. He was cool. Man. It was like,
yeah, that national title game against Florida State. Like that national title game against Florida State, like seeing him juke all those guys in the background, and then like you didn't see quarterbacks like that. I mean, there were running quarterbacks for him, Randall Cunningham or Cordell Stewart, but they weren't like that.
They
a
were
guy
like,
that could take it to the house at any time. Like,
yeah, like Scott Frost could like run and stuff, but he couldn't throw to save his life, you know. But like Vic could throw pretty good, and he was like lightning fast, you know.
And Scott Frost wasn't even the best Husker. Tommy Frazier was by far and away best Husker quarterback. Now, you guys remember the Michael Vick experience commercial? And just how –
where he was thrown out of the stadium?
That was so insane and so badass.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you get the kid that comes in and you strap on the Falcons helmet. He's in the machine and he's like, go, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And then he does a flip into the end zone. And then Michael Vick is like, and that ain't in the playbook, but it should be.
Well, he won that wild card playoff game.
Yeah,
in overtime against the Vikings, then he took off. It was a passing play, but he took off.
He just took off to the house,
60 yards, and then just kept running through the end zone. I was like, man, what a stud!
I remember when he went up to Green Bay, and this is when Green Bay, you go to play a playoff game in Green Bay, is just death. Mm-hmm. I think Brett Favre was like undefeated at the time, and they go in there, and Michael Vick just like de-pantsed them. It was like a jaw-dropping, like the dome team goes to Green Bay and wins the game,
which never happens in the playoffs. That's why they print NFC championship runs, because nobody can win in Green Bay, but they could, that was crazy,
except for Eli Manning apparently.
Yeah,
twice.
Another cold weather quarterback though. So
he's a mouth breather, so
Mr. Phil, back on topic with your 30 for 30s.
I have a few that I have watched numerous times, and I decided to ask my wife today, my wife Courtney. I said, what is the 30 for 30 that you would say that I watch the most? Because she will sometimes just come on in while I'm watching a 30 for 30 or while I'm watching and see what I'm watching. And without hesitation, she said the Reggie Miller one. So winning time, Reggie Miller versus the Knicks. I've watched probably 15 times. And with me, it's nostalgia based. I remember being in my living room watching the 8 points in 9 seconds or whatever, because it was on NBA on NBC on a Sunday, I believe. And I remember watching that game and being amazed at what Reggie Miller did. So that is easily the one I've watched the most. The 30 for 30s I usually watch are like 90s and earlier. because it's nostalgia, me thinking of my childhood and so forth. With Bud, I'm with him about this magic moment. I was also a Rockets fan, so I enjoy that section of it, watching the Magic
sweep
to the Rockets. But I was also a huge Penny Hardaway fan, even though he wasn't on my team. And Shaq is one of those that is larger than life, and you see everywhere, and you see his highlights everywhere. And Penny, I think he's forgotten way too often, and he's actually underrated because people don't remember Penny Hardaway. And I don't know. I know Bud's a huge Penny fan, so you might agree that he needs to be thought of more often.
And what beats the Little Penny commercials from back?
Oh, yeah, and the Little Penny commercials. They were awesome.
Bud had a Penny jersey.
With Chris Rock. Didn't he do the voice of Little Penny?
Yeah. Yep.
And after Shaq went to the Lakers, like, Penny kind of took over. I mean, he was scoring like 30 points a game. The Magic were like a fringe playoff team then without Shaq. But, I mean, Penny was kind of showing out. And then injuries kind of hit him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the Bad Boys I've enjoyed. But also another one is Four Falls of Buffalo. I really enjoy as well. One thing is because I was a Cowboys fan. So once again, it's fun to watch the Bills lose to the Cowboys. But also, I don't know why. I have very nostalgic memories of watching the Bills on Saturday playoff game. And just seeing those Bills jerseys bring back so many memories of, I think it's they actually lost. It's when they lost to the Jaguars in the playoffs. And I remember that was a Saturday afternoon game. And for some reason, just watching them in those Bills jerseys in a playoff game brings back memories of watching them in my bedroom while I had a football and was throwing it up and watching the Jaguars Bills play. So to me, the 30 for 30 is all about nostalgia. Whatever brings back nostalgic memories for me.
Was that when Doug Flutie was quarterback for the Bills when they played the Jaguars?
And I think that was Kelly's last year, I think it was close to his last year.
Mark Brunell was for the Jaguars, right?
Yes.
Brunell was for the Jaguars.
All right, that's a guy that's actually really kind of forgotten about and underrated in my.
Yeah, he took him to what, two AFC title games out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Anyway.
He took the franchise team and the expansion team to two AFC championships. Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive, man. You also had Keenan McCardell and
Jimmy Smith.
Yeah.
Who was the running back for those Jaguars teams?
Well, Natron Means was there for five seconds. And nope. Then there was Fred Taylor and
Natron Means played for him.
Yep.
I think it was Natron Means I was thinking about. He was the running back on that team.
He was the big guy that played for the Steelers. And then,
man, I love Natron Means when he played for San Diego.
Yeah, the Chargers. That's right.
I was like just completely mesmerized by Natron Means. Yeah. Of course, I'm a Chief fan, and I hated watching him, you know, just truck Derek Thomas. But at the same time, I'm just like, man, dude, that guy's huge. What the hell?
I'm glad Phil brought up NBA on NBC. Like, that was by far the best NBA broadcast ever.
Oh, hands
especially
down.
Their Sundays. The music was on point, first of all. And they tried, like, they came the closest to, like, making the NBA, like, an event on the weekends, kind of like the NFL. Like, they would show, like, three games. Like, there was a noon o'clock game, the 2:30 game, you know, like, the night game. Nowadays, it's like ESPN might show one Sunday game, maybe two.
ESPN
and also in those times,
NBA worth a flip, in my opinion.
No,
the NBA on NBC, load management. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Bud. Man, I mean, you think about like you remember how they took the NBC Peacock logo and then it would like light up.
No.
Like, man, that almost gives me chills just thinking about it. I love the NBA on the NBC.
Yeah,
I remember I'd go up to my parents' room and they'd let me watch on their TV in there.
John Tesh actually wrote the jingle.
A lot of it also has to do with how many games were televised as opposed to now. I mean, like NBA on NBC was you need to watch because how many games are going to be televised? When now you can get 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever. If you have NBA TV or different channels, you can get more, but you can get a numerous games a day. When back then it was like, I need my 2 or 3 games on Sunday, maybe a TBS.
And then TNT would have like one on Thursday. Yeah. And that was about it. Yeah, you're right.
So I think a lot of it has to do with the access to games that we have now.
Honestly, I wish Turner Sports would just take over the NBA, because ESPN has just really done it just an insane disservice, in my opinion. At least when you watch, you know, it on TNT, you kind of feel like this is actually sort of special. And you watch it on ESPN, I mean, it just feels generic.
And Inside the NBA is by far the best NBA
show. Oh, totally. It's
actually
fabulous.
On HBO Max, there's a show about Inside the NBA. And there's like an episode about each guy. There's one about Ernie, one about Kenny, one about Charles, and then one about Shaq. And it was good. It was actually good, like the background of how they ended up on TNT and like all
that.
Yeah,
I knew they were doing a documentary on them. I didn't know it was on HBO Max, though.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, that's where I watched it.
Okay, then I need, because I've been wanting to watch it. I just haven't.
For my 30 for 30s that I keep going back to, I mean, I'm a huge baseball fan. The one that I can't seem to get enough of is Catching Hell, the Steve Bartman 30 for 30. I think I've watched this like almost like 12 times at this point.
Jesse should be a special guest for this.
that was on my list.
He was so pissed when that happened. I remember that.
That was such a crushing thing. I mean, you know, Albert Pujols is, you know, out today. I mean, the Angels cut Albert Pujols. And just talking about crushing baseball events, I mean, in 2005, the Houston Astros are up 2 runs in game 5 against the St. Louis Cardinals in the NLCS. And Albert Pujols goes up there and crushes a 3-run home run in the top of the 9th inning. I remember going into your all's kitchen cabinet, Josh and Bud, and just closing the door after that and just sitting in the kitchen cabinet for like 2 hours, just like humming to myself.
I thought 2005 was the year you guys went to the World Series.
We did. We recovered and we won game 6, but the way the Pujols destroyed that ball, he hit it over the railroad track and over the Crawford boxes there in the left field. And I just remember just the pit of my stomach just dropped out and I could not pull it together. I'm sitting there in y'all's kitchen cabinet for like 2 hours.
Was that before or after you threw a dart at the oversized picture of yourself and Gene Kaiser on the wall? I mean,
I'm still, you know, really.
Yeah, how did we end up with that portrait again?
I took it over to your all's house.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Best part was that Rob threw darts at his own face.
you gotta throw darts at something, man.
Forgot about that, actually.
The thing about the Bartman game is I've always just been amazed at how Alex Gonzalez gets off completely free when, after the Bartman game, he had the error in the field that would have ended the game with a double play. I mean,
there was a whole game.
Yeah, but why does nobody get up? Like, I feel like you should get more upset at Alex Gonzalez than this random fan who just tried to get a ball.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also game 6. Game 7 too.
Yeah,
but that's just like the Red Sox in the 80s, because that was in the game.
Yeah,
6.
The Buckner was
the Buckner game wasn't in a game 7, which people think it was. And they still had an extra game.
Yeah, I keep going back to the Bartman thing. I mean, just the entire story is just so insanely bizarre in so many ways. And I love the sequence where they talk about how they snuck him out of the stadium. He's like just sitting there and he's watching himself on the TV and like, you know, this undisclosed bunker that's like under Wrigley Field. Yeah. He's just watching it on replay over and over and over again, according to the security guard. He's just like having this out-of-body experience.
You know, probably that morning he was like calling his mom. He's like, "Mom, I got great seats right along the third baseline. I'm going to be there. World Series, or not World Series, but NLCS.
No, they were going to win the World Series. they were going to win the NLCS.
That happens,
and then go to
just
the World
completely
Series.
Ruined.
Yeah,
just completely ruined his life. Like from one absolute high to the absolute lowest of lows all in one day. Like, it's amazing if you think about it.
And like, I put myself in that position and I would have done the same thing he did and all the fans around him did.
Well, everyone was reaching for the ball.
Yeah. I mean, he was the only one reaching for the ball. There, you have no guarantee that Moises Alou wasn't the best fielder. No guarantee he's going to catch the ball.
I, as an Astro fan, I can attest, Moises Alou, you didn't really know if he's going to catch the ball or not.
Teams need a scapegoat whenever their team loses. And yeah. It landed on him.
The other 30 for 30 that I watched a dozen times or more is also baseball. I mean, it's 4 days in October. And I'm not a Bo Sox fan, but I have obviously had those moments where my team is down 3-0. And I need the hope. And particularly like this last year, the ALCS, the Astros were down 3-0 to Tampa Bay. And then they started winning and they started coming back and they forced a game 7. And I'm sitting there watching 4 days in October. I think I watched it twice during the ALCS just because I'm like, I need the hope. I need to know that this is possible.
See, I like that story because we, you know, as you guys probably remember, we were friends with who we called in Boston, Sean Ryan back then.
Sean.
Boston sports fan in general, but living that moment with him of the Red Sox coming back. I remember I watched game 7 with him at Murphy's and just seeing how like ecstatic he was when they pulled it off. Me, definitely not a Red Sox fan either, but I was happy for him. And so it's nostalgic for me.
Well, I find it's kind of completely nuts. I'm just thinking about it is that we got so opposite side of the spectrum here because we're friends with Jesse and just complete and total travesty and heartbreak. And then we're friends with Sean. And then it's like, you know, like the greatest moment in sports, you know, fandom.
Sean kind of came around at a good time in lives sports wise because he got us kind of like as ancillary Boston-ish fans, you might say, for the rise of Brady. I mean, that year we were in the dorms was when, like, Brady took over for Bledsoe.
Yeah, the Pats won the Super Bowl my freshman year.
You had the whole Tuck rule thing against the Raiders in the snow and stuff. And, I mean, you know, he was, like, a fun – you know, he was a great guy, you know. So it was kind of fun to root for his team if our teams were out or whatever.
Yeah,
no, and Boston come back too. So I mean, it was I don't know if I would have enjoyed him the same way if I didn't know anybody who really loved those teams so much. But
yes, Josh, there was a time when it was actually kind of fun to root for the Patriots. That was a long time ago.
Back when I thought,
a long time ago,
kid's story, they'll win one, you know.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. It didn't last very long. For Patriots.
Exactly. Little did we know what that Tom Brady guy was going to become at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Guys, thanks for the discussion this evening. It's always enlightening in so many different avenues and ways. And I would like to kick it on over here to Mr. Philip Boone. Please tell our listening audience what is our next movie next month.
And next month, we're going to get back to nostalgia, which we discussed a little bit earlier. And we discussed a little bit about Michael Jordan. So we're going to watch Michael Jordan's starring role in Space Jam. So it's the 5th of next month, and it is going to be a whole lot of fun as we discuss Looney Tunes, Michael Jordan, Wayne Knight, Bill Murray, Larry Bird, whoever is involved with the movie Space Jam. So definitely check it out and listen to our next episode, the 5th of next month.
You heard that right. Space Jam right here. We'll catch you all later.